the goal of what we're about is to try eventually to be able to duplicate the type of ceremony that existed 2,000 years ago. Now, all of life centers on a marriage. The marriage is the purpose of existence. And throughout the Talmud it says stuff like, some of you have heard this before, but I'm going to repeat a couple of them. But with the Hebrews, married life was normal life. Any exception called for an apology and an explanation. Now you have to forget all about your little feminist bullshit and modern psychology, and you have to forget all of the little thingies that and opinions that you have, otherwise you'll never understand what I'm about to say. Because the marriage function is to show forth a mystery, is to be a typology, a metaphor for the purpose of the universe. Okay? So in marriage, we can see why time and space exists. In the exact ceremony. That's its only function. It's not to have more little, it's not to legitimatize fucking or have more little, make more little atoms. It's to reveal a mystery. You got it?
So, like, did Jesus have to answer this? People came up and said, why aren't you married being, you know, 30 years old? And then he would...
Yeah, no question. Now, it was regarded as waiting, it was awaiting everyone upon reaching sexual maturity. Once you had reached puberty, you were eligible. And not only eligible, it was required. And so most of the marriage contracts were made in early childhood. Almost every marriage was arranged. And the idea was it was arranged because that the marriage itself, if a man, you won't like this one either, but if a man's family chose him a bride, and the bride came into the house, and he rejected her, she then became her only lot. She couldn't be married again under the strict and the orthodox. Her only lot in life was to be a prostitute. And that's where the prostitutes at Magdala came from. They were, you know, Mary Magdalene, the prostitute. Magdala, as you know, wasn't her last name. It was the region. The Magdala was a red light district of Jerusalem. Now, the reason for it isn't male or female justice. The reason for it is to reveal the mystery. You've got to keep that in your head. That's why the apostate religion is always called the whore of Babylon. That's all she can be because she's been rejected by God. It's a Catholic church or it's a, you know, it's some place or some. The apostate church is any church that, or any person that continues on in self-seeking is in Babylon. Now, there are three, in the ancient times, there were three great events in life. And everything centered on those three events. Obviously, first was the birth. Last was the death. The second was marriage. Now, marriage was considered the most important of the three events. When an Israelite married, that ceremony outweighed in the minds of the participants every other thing that had ever taken place on the face of the earth. Now, remember, the word Israel reveals the mystery. It's Ishrael, she who sees God. You can't see God and live? Now we understand the cross. The purpose of time and space is that God would prepare a bride. And that revelation can be seen in a ceremony if it's done in knowledge and revelation. Now, all of the Talmud, all of the Zohar, the Midrash, all of the ancient documents, which are quoted in the New Testament, convey the idea that marriage, you must enter into the marriage ceremony with far higher thoughts than the activity of the merriment or the feast that was going to be in the marriage ceremony. Your mind had to see why that ceremony was taking place. I've told you before that every marriage I've been to, except the ones we've had, I've been bored to death. And it should tell us about something, about what's going to happen to the marriage. If the ceremony, the highlight, is boring, just what the hell is going to happen to the marriage? Now, all kinds of neat stuff. Like, at the union of Adam and Eve, Michael and Gabriel, the two highest angels, according to the Talmud, acted as the groomsmen. And an angelic choir, Michael was the best man, and Gabriel was groomsman. And an angelic choir sang the wedding hymn. And spoke the benedictions, which we're about to find out what they were. Now, even today they still do it in the Hasidic community. And I'm not, you can do this if you want to, but I'm not, since it's brand new, I'm not going to ask any of you to do it. Prior to the day of the wedding, the pious fasted, prayed, and asked for forgiveness among the brethren. The reason was is that you had to enter into the wedding with the right attitude. If there was any resentments among the community, then the wedding would be defiled. Now in the spirit, what happens is if there are any resentments, you've got on the wrong wedding garment. Now, at the wedding itself, the groomsmen and the others, the friends of the bridegroom, were merciless. If anyone interrupted in any way the ceremony and the function, they were removed bodily, taken outside, and the door was locked. They could bring none of their own, no member of the wedding party could bring any, no guest of the wedding could bring any of their own stuff into the ceremony. The reason is that the bride is the centerpiece of the ceremony. She is the reason for the ceremony. And if anyone brought anything in, any little unforgiveness or hatred or emulation or strife, they were escorted out the door and the door was locked. That's where the New Testament references come with regard, if you have on the wedding garment, they threw them outside and there was wailing and gnashing of teeth and all that good stuff. All right? We might have fun with that one. Interestingly enough...
Wedding bouncers.
Yeah. He's not talking about the bed, Jackie.
You're the one who thought of that.
Your friend is really a nasty girl. I mean, we're talking major nasty. Now, according to the Zohar, entrance into the marriage state cause there to be a total and complete forgiveness of sin. The act of getting married created the purity itself. You understand?
State of innocence?
A state of purity and a state of innocence, yeah. A state of virginity. That's a biggie. Remember, I've always told those of you who have gotten married, when I've always whispered in the bride, I don't care if she'd been married 10 times, you're a virgin tonight. Because nothing has ever penetrated that line, that hymen of soul and spirit. And that's the only virginity God gives a shit about. But interestingly enough, the ancient mystical rabbis saw through all of the stuff to see that the act of marriage itself was the forgiveness of sin. Now, of course, that's what the New Testament says. All right. modern commentators, the reason a lot of this stuff has been rejected, because by even some of the, except for the Hasidim, was that they were afraid this would engender national pride in Israel. Israel was so arrogant. They considered the birth of every Israelite as outweighing the rest of the entire world.
That's true.
I mean, so a lot of this stuff has been lessened in terms of being taught, because that's why, in fact, in the Zohar and in the Talmud, in some editions of it, all of this stuff has been excised, because they don't want to do anything to promote
anti-Semitism.
Okay. Now, the point at 8 days old, the male is circumcised. The moment the knife touched the foreskin, the rabbis and the family began the prayer for that child's successful marriage. It was part of the liturgy, if you will. He was circumcised in order that he might be married in knowledge.
That's really wild if you think about taking time out. There's no time between the circumcision and marriage.
Now, of course, now for us, it's the new Israel, that the circumcision has to be at the heart. Now, I'm not going to go, I did it in the other group, so if you want to hear it, you can listen to the taste, but I described in detail what happened, what was going on at the bride's parents' home, what was going on at the groom's parents' home, and then when the plot process started and the wedding procession.
Now, was last night?
No, it's in an earlier tape. But I described it in great detail. Now, tonight, we're going to look at it differently. Once that wedding procession started, everything gave way to it. If there was a war going on between two tribes within Israel, and the third tribe had to pass through their land to go to the wedding, the war had to stop. If the high priest had died and his wedding procession was passing through and intersected with the wedding procession,
his funeral
procession had to stop and give way, and the people that were in the line of the funeral procession had to stop the procession and join the wedding.
That's great.
Nothing in Israel outweighed the wedding procession. That's why the parables of Christ with regard to the marriage supper and the book of Revelation is so mind-blowing, because it describes this condition. Now, okay, there's all kinds of great stories about Adam and Eve's marriage, which I won't go into tonight. Every man, you couldn't hide, once the wedding procession started, you couldn't, if you saw it or they saw you see it, you were compelled by law to join it.
That's great.
Could be perpetual on your way to a wedding.
Oh yeah, many times. There were times of the year when there were 3 and 4 weddings a week.
And then you wouldn't get anything done.
You didn't get anything done.
Even that's shown in the parable. I mean, the only way to not be part of the wedding is to hide.
That's right. No, every bit of work that you were doing, I don't care if you had a brand new wife, nothing that you could be doing in your life could outweigh. You'd have to, in fact, if you were a part of the wedding, the tribe, I like tribe, we're a tribe. Okay, if you're a part of the tribe, you have to quit your job in order to attend the wedding. Nothing in the universe could interrupt that wedding. And could be, was more important than that wedding. You got it?
Was the procession like on the way to the ceremony or after the ceremony or part of the ceremony?
No, it was on the way to. It was from the the groom's, no, the groom is gone. The groom is over at a buddy's house. The bride's family and the groom's mother have taken over the groom's mother's house.
Okay.
And it's for decorating, for preparing the bridal chamber, for all of the things.
This is described in detail in another tape.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I just want to hear it at one point.
Now, King Agrippa, you remember Paul almost converted King Agrippa in the New Testament? In the Talmud, it says that King Agrippa became blessed in all he did because whenever a wedding procession went by or near his palace, he stopped everything he was doing and joined the procession.
That's what I
mean. Now, there's a great story about Jezebel. Jezebel is the bitch of the Bible. Right? Bible bitch. Now, you know, we've studied Jezebel. You know all about Jezebel. Here's the story. When Jezebel was eaten by the dogs, you remember? Her hands and her feet were spared. They didn't eat her hands or her feet. Because amidst all her wickedness, she clapped at every marriage procession and accompanied the mourners a certain distance on the way to the burial ground.
She clapped. That's it.
Save her hands. Well, there's a couple of them up at Tulsa. Big ones. The betrothal. Okay. At the betrothal, in the spirit, the betrothal took place at Passover, right? That's when God betrothed the bride. When you're ready to leave Egypt and all that crap, the world, then you can be betrothed. Then you are betrothed. Okay. Now, at the betrothal, which was a contract, you were legally married. You couldn't screw around even with your betrothed, which we'll see in a minute. They drank a toast, signed a contract, and said this. This is the blessing for betrothal. Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe. And this is the exact words that were used at the time of Christ and before, 1,000 years before. Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us by his commandments and commanded us concerning the forbidden relations and has forbidden unto us, bride and groom, unto us the betrothed, and has allowed those who are wedded, only those who are wedded, unto us through the marriage canopy and sanctification. What it says is, the reason that premarital sex without, I mean, forget sex. That's not even, I don't want to think about sex. Yes, I do. God doesn't care if you go screw your little brains off. And out and everything.
Other things off.
Yeah, and all that. But what God cares about is that during the time that you're betrothed, that you don't get your dick in the way. Because God, by his Holy Spirit, is going to form Christ in the bride. Everything and all these ancient betrothal things are for the purpose of the revelation of what happened with Mary and the Holy Spirit. And that promise is to you. You got it? That Christ, the purpose of life, is formed in you. And if you, you get the picture. Now, the canopy, all Jews got married under a canopy. Okay? The canopy started with Isaac and Rebekah back at Abraham, way, way back. And it says that Isaac took Rebekah to Sarah's tent. And that's where they consummated the marriage. So whenever it talks about a canopy, it's talking about the consummation of the marriage. The two becoming one. Now, as of this moment, whether or not any of you know it, that aren't married, you're all virgins. I don't care how what you've done in the past, that's meaningless. I'm talking about the bride people. You and you.
Betrothed.
Yeah, betrothed guys. Women. And again, in the betrothal, it says, you have commanded us concerning and forbidden unto us the canopy. Now the reason, you got to understand the reason. Because it says the canopy and the word canopy, which encompasses the whole of the union, and sanctification constitute the complete marriage. And therefore the end of the blessing says, blessed art thou, O Lord, who sanctifies Israel through canopy and sanctification. Now that's what all of life, that's what this whole book is about with regard to the bride. This whole book is about sanctification, not meaning that you're holy or something after the world's understanding, but it means that you have seen that only you've tried everything else, either by empathy or experience, and you've seen that it's only the hope of what's set before you, which is a union with God the Father, is the thing that will satisfy the longing of your heart. Everything in this Bible is about marriage. Okay? Now, I said all that to say this. The betrothal period varied, but according to the strictest authorities, it should never exceed 1 year. The reason for it.
All right.
Or in some cases, 1 month.
Yeah.
Now, the reason for it, and there's all kinds of stuff about this, is Proverbs. Listen to this, Proverbs 13, verse 12. Hope deferred maketh the heart sick. But when the desire cometh, it is the tree of life. Okay? Now the first clause is wife, long engagements were forbidden. The second clause is in regard to short engagements. Okay, so in the evening of the actual marriage, the bride was led from her paternal home to that of her husband's mother. And again, that's why for us, you know, you've heard me say a jillion times, all that the human race is God's sperm cells. And the sperm cells, all that the linear time is passing through or trying to get through. We're just wiggling around, gadding about. We're trying to get to the egg. And the egg is the groom's mother, the New Jerusalem, which is the overriding reality in us all. And so all you've done all your life is you've been a sperm cell that can think and pretend it's independent and do stuff. But you've had one goal, and that's to join the egg, the New Jerusalem. And that's what we're all about. Okay? So the possession of the bride was led by the musicians and a whole bunch of people. Again, and the weddings strained resources. That's what was there. One of the functions of a wedding was to strain resources.
To do what?
Strain your resources. Like, for instance, not to go in debt. Never, never, ever did you go in debt. But it's strained. You're never judged by what you don't have. But for us, this wedding is straining our resources. It's supposed to. Now, as the wedding procession was moving along, especially if it was a long way, they had wineskins. And they distributed wine to the people in the procession, and the people that were joining the procession, and they you know, the trail mix kind of stuff that has nuts and fruit and all in dates and raisins, that's what, and they distributed, they gave that to the kids.
Yogurt covered almonds? Good. I want to see that in print.
I didn't say yogurt covered, I said nuts and fruit.
Whose resources did it strain this? Both families or
tribes? Yeah.
The whole communities.
Obviously, he had just dropped everything we're doing following.
Now, those nearest the bride's maids, had flowers and myrtle branches. Again, all rose as the procession came by, and then they joined them. Now, it was considered a religious duty, as the procession was moving, and once you got into the place, it was considered a religious duty to break into praise of the beauty, the modesty, and the virtues of the bride. Everything on this ceremony centers on the bride. All the groom does is sort of hang around. But you see the reason for it.
That's all I've been doing.
Is there some relationship between Jodl and Ruth?
Well, I don't want to get into that.
Bluish tint as well. That's what makes you hang around.
Bad.
Now, we're not going to do this in your wedding, but in your wedding, you're going to wear the crown of flowers, and that's when I'm not going to teach you that thing. But it has to do with my love is a garden enclosed.
Oh, I'm going to have one.
You're going to have a flower garden?
No.
On your head?
We have a little thing holding on the veil that's going to be white flowers.
Okay, I'll talk about that then a little bit. But it's what it means is you have in Isaiah 54 it says you have been. Let me read it real quick.
Yeah, we just decided to do that. We
didn't
know.
Okay, well, that's good.
What a coincidence!
Hey, cut that stuff.
Well, I can't find it. But anyway, the point is that he shall turn your waste places into a garden. You're returning to the Garden of Eden. The garden of all, in the Song of Solomon, always about the garden. You're an enclosed garden. The garden is kept. It's perfect. It's, you know, it's all the weeds have been taken out and all that kind of good stuff. Okay. Yeah, that's my role. My job in life is to be spiritual diazonon.
And Roundup.
And
Black Flag.
Raid!
Holy! Roto-Rooter. Now. The formal legal instrument was signed, and it's called a ketubah. K-E-T-H-U-B-A-H. And it's amazingly close to what the present vows are. It says, it set forth that the bride didn't have to say anything. The bride didn't say anything.
That's great.
All the groom had to say, though, he says. He undertakes to work for her, to honor her, to keep her, to care for her, to nourish her, to cherish her, for her, as is the manner of the men of Israel. Then the groom promised to give his new wife a minimum of 200 zoos.
It could be 1 night for 2 nights or 5 nights.
Let me start it
over. Are we already counting here?
Start with the
Brooklyn zoo. I'll define zoos.
I was the one with the man eating polar bear.
Yeah.
Zoos. Z-U-Z.
What is
Z-U-Z? Zoos. It's a type of money. I'm just being fair. Sorry. Okay, but he had to promise to increase her dowry, that which she had total control over, by at least one half. Now, if the bride didn't have a dowry, if she was too poor, then the tribe gave her the dowry. In other words, you can never have any problem. You got to understand that, or you'll never. There's not possible for you and you to have a problem. Now, the other thing that he says, he laid out all that he owned. And he laid it out before her in a legal instrument. And he promised to take care of all the possessions to her best advantage.
Wow. This is great. Wow, that's amazing. By him and for him, all things are made.
No. Isn't that neat? Okay. Then they had to do the legal washing of hands. If anybody makes fun of my way, I say it, I'm going to kick him. Now the cup was filled. Well, wait a minute, before I fill the cup. Okay, it's time to break the news to Butch.
Butch!
Why does this affect Butch so much rather than that?
Huh?
I just want you to remember that everybody else isn't getting married after me, isn't after this thing.
That's right.
Whatever it is.
Are you talking about stuff that comes after washing hands and before cup was filled?
This may be something Butch should exercise after you're done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tom, are you going to sit there?
Darlene's
The feast, the wedding feast, lasted 7 days.
The wedding feast lasted 7 days.
Now, here's the way it was done.
Ed McMahon.
On the night of the wedding, there was a feast at the wedding, at the house, or wherever the wedding was, right? On the second night, there was a feast at someone else's house. At the third, feast at someone else's house. Everything stopped in terms of, the synagogues didn't meet, nothing. They had the parties for 7 days. So that's what we're going to do for your wedding.
Yeah. Wow!
You thought it was going to be bad.
That's the good news.
Bad news is you feel so good.
So each of the people whose house can do it will have a party each of the 7 days. During that 7 day period, all the male's attention is on you.
On who?
On Butch. Right. All the males. And all the females' attention is on Donna. Your purpose in being is to make them complete, happy, comfortable, and at rest.
Yay.
That doesn't sound so bad.
Now, wait a minute. You move in, the night of the wedding, you move into your, wherever you're going to live. But you have children with you that have to be, the legal requirement is that the children have to be old enough to talk about what they see.
You're making this up.
No, I'm not. The reason for it is, no, the man and the woman sleep in different rooms for those 7 days. They're legally married. They're totally, the ceremony has been completed, but for 7 days.
That's neat.
Listen to me, it's really neat. And it gets neater.
Ooh.
And for the 7 days, your whole being is to be made comfortable with regard to the point of consummation.
To get used to it.
So there's no nervousness. There's no. There's no. There's no. No, I'm just talking about 7 days. Now the reason is because the 7 days represent linear time, just like in all the feasts. And the eighth day is the consummation.
It's interesting because we postponed our honeymoon for a week.
Well, that's great. Yeah, that's perfect.
What about that room you're gonna get us the night of the long
way? Well, we're gonna delay it.
We haven't got
it. Well,
you're talking about
the other reason I
think. Wait a minute, you're saying this is from the point of the marriage for 7 days?
That's it.
You're talking about after they put rings on your phone?
And the other thing is, listen, there's all kinds of neat stuff that is attended to this. Think about what it means. You're not just betrothed any longer, you're legally married. You have the right to engage under the law. But again, so that if the typology would be complete, there are children with you all the time. They sleep with you. They sleep in the same, you're in different bedrooms. And so on the eighth day, the day of resurrection, the children go home and the marriage is complete. Now, the canopy over the wedding, in the wedding place, is in the center of the room. And around the room, there are seven
circular rows of chairs. And then in the middle is the eighth, which is, there's the ceremony, it represents the eighth level. Again, it's a 7 days of linear time.
What's that from? So the seven rows of chairs.
That's from the Zohar.
Zohar sounded like Zohar.
Now, there's all kinds of stuff now. One of the famous rabbis has the comment, this following comment. The merit of attending the wedding lies only in the words of congratulations and the toasts with understanding that are addressed to the bride and the groom. I mean, there's no merit in going to a wedding and sitting around there like a bump on the log. You're encouraged to expand in the tale during this process.
We can get some toast going.
We got toasts.
My suggestion, can I make the suggestion at this point? That please, at least the guys, prepare a toast.
Toast.
I mean, don't go there and go, oh, I don't know what to say, which is what I usually do. Think about it and prepare a toast. So that when the time comes, you'll have
a toast. Okay. Now again, the mechanical repetition of any tradition has absolutely no value if each time you do not understand better its typical and true meaning. Okay? Now the cup is filled.
What cups?
Benedictions. We're about to do the benedictions.
We get to break the cup.
Well.
That's
fine. Well, since you brought it up, in the ancient times, it wasn't a glass of wine or wine glass that was broken. It was a precious vase or that you own. And what you did, the governor of the feast took when the marriage was legally completed at the point in time of saying, what we do now, saying I do, etc. Then he took that vase. That was expensive. And he took it and he threw it against the wall. And it represented that you had to be broken in order that the marriage could come forth. Now what they do now is they drank a wine glass and then the whole group threw it and that got too expensive. So now what they do at the weddings is they take as they're standing up before the rabbi, they take a wine glass, a lot of times plastic, and they wrap it in a napkin and then stomp on it. But okay, now the blessings of the groom, and this is the groom's blessings. These are said on each of the days of this, each of the 7 days. There's seven of them, and they're called the seven wedding benedictions.
This starts the day after the wedding, right?
No, they start the night. That night.
So the wedding night's the
first
night.
First night.
Okay. Yeah. So we're going to do all three.
Small
He's
things.
Figuring this out.
Well, again, I'm telling you, just pray about it. Think about it. See, I mean, it's, you know, what's 7 days? What the hell? I just think it's appropriate.
Yeah,
I think it's funnier in hell. Considering your problems.
She threw a Bible.
Look at that.
Threw the book at him.
Threw the book at him.
That's where it came from.
Ooh. The direct hit.
Now I lost my place.
He hit the engine room on the red light.
That's an exit set.
No. The defensive systems were switched. Right.
Now the point, again, let me go back to these 7 days since we were brought up. Everything, I mean, no matter who you are, no matter how many times you've done it in the past, something mystical takes place in your mind on the wedding night. And that needs to be nourished. And so the purpose of the 7 days and the feasts, the parties, and the attention of the women to the bride and the men to the groom is to do everything in the universe to take the pressure off so that you can enter into that and it'll be the best climax you ever had in your life. Because the purpose, when you enter that canopy, your purpose is to take the bride to heaven. There are seven benedictions. There are seven wedding benedictions. There are six, and then the last one is where the groom The bridegroom drinks the toast to the bride, and he says what we say every time during the afkumen. It's the blessing of the wine. He said, "Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who has created the fruit of the vine." And as you drink that toast, you will look at the bride, and everybody will join in with you on that toast, because the bride represents the fruit of the vine. Now that's the last of the seven. So here are the six. The first one is, "Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who has created all things to his glory." The second one, "Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, the creator of man, who has created man in his image, in the image of his likeness, and has prepared unto him out of himself a bride forever."
Wow.
Next one. "Blessed art thou, O Lord, creator of man. May the barren greatly rejoice and exult when her children will be gathered in her midst in joy. Blessed art thou, O Lord, who maketh Zion joyful in her children. Mayest thou make the loved companions, the bride and the groom, greatly rejoice, even as of old thou didst gladden Adam in the Garden of Eden." Again, he gladdened because he made her a bride. He made a bride. Now, in the same way, that when Adam looked and he named all the animals, and naming isn't just saying, "Well, you're a pigeon." Naming is the word implies total and complete understanding. And so in the naming, he found nothing that met his need. Now, the grooms in each case here, and that's what we represent. In naming, that's all you've done all your life is name stuff. And nothing you have named fill the desire of your heart. So in the bride, when the bride is named, as Adam named Eve, then the desire was fulfilled. You understand? That's the same thing that Christ has done vis-a-vis the spiritual church. There's a big deal in the naming of something. Naming doesn't, it implies everything in terms of understanding, of wisdom, of all of the things. Okay? Now next, the fourth one is, "Blessed art thou, O Lord, who maketh the bridegroom and the bride to rejoice." Then the next one gets funny. The next benediction says, "Blessed art thou, O Lord, our King." Remember, all the time before this, it says, "O Lord, our God." Now it says, "Blessed art thou, O Lord, our King, God of the universe, who has created joy and gladness, bridegroom and bride, rejoicing and song, mirth and dancing with joy. Love and brotherhood, peace and friendship. Now, speedily, O Lord our God, may be heard, may we hear in the cities of Judah and in the street of Jerusalem, the streets of Jerusalem, the voice of joy and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, the voice of singing." Now, the word singing there is a word that means, it says, let me read it again. "And the voice of the bride, the voice of breaking forth into singing and shouts of joy of the bridegroom from the canopy."
I love it. That's a blessing.
Yeah. And then, and complete it, "and youth from the feast of their song." And the last one is, "Blessed art thou, O Lord, who maketh the bridegroom to rejoice in the bride."
Amen. That's a good.
Now these six benedictions have been recited, they're at least 2,500 years old. They're at least from the time of
Ezra
and Nehemiah. But everybody thinks they're from the time of Abraham.
Everybody.
Now then finally, and the friends of the bridegroom led the bridal pair to the bridal chamber and to the bed. Right. And then, now again, now we're going to do some, now we're going to, sometimes this led to, the reason they did, because nobody, they didn't trust, right? So then they had all these weird customs over the years. Every time they fell into, every time that Israel went into apostasy, then it was reflected in this marriage thing. And the biggest thing that it was a lack of trust. And so that's when you hear all these great the stories about inspecting the sheets and the groomsman, you know, inspecting the with a candle to see whether or not that the bride was truly a virgin. And there's all kinds of crap in the Talmud about this process, or after the thing to make sure there was blood on the sheet, because, you know, all of the ridiculousness that, well, in the spirit is what's being done today in this stupid legalism. But our function is a function of trust.
Yeah.
You understand that? We're not here for legalism. I'm here to try to get you to see the mystery, and that everything and every part of your life would show forth that mystery. All right. Now, they were never alone except for 1 hour before consummation, and they were alone only for that brief period of time so that, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, we know.
Now, I mean, some of the greatest rabbis, like, they get their stories of, I mean, they just got drunk out of their gourds at the weddings. But we're not going to do that.
So they were alone, consummated in marriage, and then for the rest of the time of the week they were apart.
Is this on the eighth day we're talking about?
On the eighth, for this, yeah, this is the eighth day.
Okay.
What I've just talked about.
Okay, after the last party's been
right.
Partied, then the friends bring them to the chamber, and that's when the consummation happens.
Right.
Okay.
Now, all invited guests were known as the children of the bride chamber. Now, a lot of interesting stuff that I found out. Just a couple of things. I've talked to Pam and Larry a little bit about this one, but and the Song of Solomon has these weird stuff, like it says he's comparing the bride to a company of Pharaoh's horses, or his chariot horses. Well, that's a dumb thing, I don't know. But it's mind-blowing what it means. That means, according to the Zohar and the Talmud, it means five things. The first and most important thing is, well, first of all, those horses and the horses and the chariot horses were more than likely they were the forerunners of what's now called the Arabian horses. They were perfect horses. I mean, we're talking about, you know, these guys are the kings of the world. I mean, the king of the world, and everything was done to make sure that these horses were perfect. But the first thing when you're comparing a bride to a company of horses, I mean, it's got to mean something. Well, it does. First thing it meant is that the bride was of the proper bloodline. She had the proper genetics. Now, in us, that means that we are of the same source. My sister, my love, because we're from the same seed of Christ. The second thing is that the horse had to be as comfortable in any environment in the world. He had to be just as comfortable in the desert without water as he was in the showroom palaces. Or her, that she was in the show. She was comfortable, perfectly comfortable in every environment. The next thing is that she was patient. Because the training process that it had gone on. The next thing is that the bloodline produced endurance, abiding. And the final thing is that she was spirited. She was without value. She was in what the world now calls humility. She had to be spirited. She had to, every once in a while,
broken.
Talk back to you. She had to be, that's what the meaning of humility is. Meaning of humility is one of these beautiful horses, mind-blowingly spirited. At any moment, there's massive risk. It's in harness. Perfect harness. Now, in the harness, the groom doesn't have control of the harness. God does.
Sorry.
Thank you, Mrs. Ed.
Mrs. Ed. Rick, great way to run a group. Analogy.
Why don't you write these down? Because I don't want to give you all these. Let me have a pencil up there or something. Okay, I don't have anything. Does everybody understand a little bit better about marriage?
Yeah. You don't have more to say?
Well, I got a lot more to say, but it's 9:30.
Yeah, it makes me want to go all right. It's a
coffee. Again, remember now, I told you that the bride... In the Song of Solomon, just a couple of the very, again, they're comparing the bride to the tents of Kedar. Well, the tents of Kedar was the chief of the Arab tribes, and the tents of Kedar were known for being totally ugly on the outside sometimes. But inside, they're full of precious jewels. And I am black but comely. The blackness is mean you are black with self-seeking. You've had enough of self-seeking. It didn't work. So outwardly, you're black, but inwardly, he sees the linen veil, the whiteness. You know, on and on and on. From now on, every year at Passover, when we do the Song of Solomon, we're going to have a greater and greater understanding because there's so much. We could spend a year studying the book of the Song of Solomon. But I want you to understand that on Saturday night, we are celebrating the end of time. Time ends at the marriage supper of the Lamb. Yeah. Not some religious bullshit, but time ends. Now, this wedding for us is an instrument of revelation. For the guests, it's to show forth the love and the fact that you are a debtor and you will lay down your life for those people because they are now brought into our world. If you start preaching to somebody, or you start saying, oh, I know truth, this is true, instead of being truth and laying down your life, we're going to have the Third World War. Okay? Now, everybody at that wedding, whether it's Matt's parents, or Matt's brothers, Matt's mother, the guests, or it's Jackie's family, or Jessica, every one of those people, you are their servants. Total bond servant. They've been brought into our world. Understand? Now, every wedding that we have from now on is going to increase in intensity. This wedding will be the greatest wedding we've ever had.
Good night tonight.
Are you okay?
I'm all right.
Been kind of going, since we get the marriage license.
Remember, to either one of you, the reason your marriage can't fail and must succeed is because if either one of you do anything to hurt the other one, these a whole bunch of people will beat you up. You got that? Unless you're in, anytime you're not in perfect joy with each other, somebody's going to beat you up.
Yeah, you better perform, man.
You have nothing to perform. You have to become broken so he can perform. That's why we're going to break that thing.
Are you going to do that?
Probably.
Yay!
Bring me something that you think is valuable.
Amen. Should we bring the vase that we just got as a wedding present?
No, that's not valuable.
He has to be able to break.
We don't want a vase to bite back. We're breaking.
Everybody understand? Everybody understand what they're going to do for the wedding?
I know.
You want a vase or just a wine glass or something like that?
I don't care.
Okay.
Now, for you, for all of you that are married or getting married, the instant you try to protect or save your marriage, you'll lose it. You must lose your marriage just like you lose your life. You can't do it. But he can.
That's what I'm saying. I can't do any of this.
But he can.
He has to.
And he will. And again, without exception, even the weird ones, the happiest, most completed marriage I've ever seen in my life, one of the married couples in this body. And the reason, one of the reasons is because if something's wrong, you know, you get a whole bunch of allies, and you get the other person's ass kicked. Sometimes it sneaks up on you. You think you're going to get their ass kicked, and you get yours kicked. But it's the point that it's the marriage, the function, its purpose is to be an instrument of revelation, not to satisfy the desires. That's the added benefit. You get to be taken as close to heaven as there is known in time and space. Amen?
Amen.
Now, each of you be mentally prepared and with a hope and with an expectation that by your obedience will bring time to an end at this wedding. I'm serious.
That's right.
I'm serious. Okay?
I want to see the rabbi dance and stuff.
Or those long index fingers he uses to point with. Physics says that's impossible.
Take it, big guy.